frequencies happen to good people like you every day. The frequency of these events are increasing at an astonishing rate. Now is the time to take responsibility for preparing and empowering yourself for the inevitable. Welcome to the Survive University Podcast, where we provide an education in preparation, giving you the tools to get ready, be ready, and stay ready. Now, let's get on with today's lesson.
Listen up, my preps. Welcome to another episode of the Survive University Podcast, where we discuss research-based solutions focused on preparation for protecting your life and your health during an emergency or disaster. Our topics cover all things survival as we discuss with industry professionals on how to help you triumph over the toughest times in your life. I'm your host, Hakeem Isler, with co-host Maine J, the OG, aka the Ordinary Guy. On today's episode, we are doing our Lessons Learned segment. We're talking about how to survive a mob. We call it Mob Rules. Now, turn on your ears and put on your thinking caps. Class is in session.
Hello, my preps. This is Maine the OG, and I'm here with my buddy and my pal, Mr. Hakeem Isler.
What's up? What's up, guys?
So today we were going to take a different course in our podcast. We wanted to discuss some things that are going on, but also take a moment to learn a little something about Mr. Hakeem. He was sharing some interesting tidbits about his past, and we were both sharing the information, and it reminded me of times in the past when, you know, we grew up in a generation where people used to fight. They fought. It was usually one person against another person, and fist to cuffs. And as things progressed and we got older, there was, you know, somebody who had the knife or the infamous switchblade or the butterfly knife. And then as we were growing during our generation, people started carrying, you know, weapons. But it's usually the situation where if there was a weapon in place, it was one person who had a weapon. And that was the oddball. That was the crazy guy. Some people had knives, some people had bats, but mostly it was fist to cuffs. And usually it was one person against another person for the most part. But things have progressed to such a point now where you have mob attacks, or you have pieces in place where people are attacked by multiple people purposefully and even maliciously, and also sometimes just for the purposes of social media entertainment. So in today's conversation, I wanted to hear Mr. Hakeem share with our audience, and I like hearing the story again about a time that he was faced with a mob type situation. And I'd like to ask him if he could tell us about the situation, tell us what you've learned now that you're older and you're more mature, and let's use it as a learning moment on what we can discuss about mob mentality.
Yeah, I like to call this episode like Mob Rules, right? Like, what are the rules of the mob, right? How do you deal with that? I also want to like go back to where you were saying like the switchblade and the butterfly knife. My thing was a lock, a combination lock,
uh-huh,
with a bandana.
Oh.
So it's like, because I could carry that in high school, because, you know, I went to a particular type of high school. I went to a decent high school, and then I went to a bad high school. And in that one, you know, you didn't know what was going to go down. But if you got caught carrying like a weapon, it was a big deal. So, you know, I would carry the lock and, you know, a bandana where I could just turn that real quick into a swinging blunt trauma instrument.
Yeah. I had brass knuckles.
Oh, yeah, prison for that.
Brass knuckles. I grew up in Brooklyn, man. Brass knuckles and whatnot. And I always wanted to have nunchucks, though, because that was cool back then. But, I mean, I never knew how to use them. But, yeah.
You were like, I'm just going to put these out like Bruce Lee and just scream real loud and somebody will run away. Like, oh, man, that dude.
He's crazy.
That dude's got it.
All right. So if you don't mind, share it. I mean, because we didn't finish talking about the story, but if you could paint a vivid picture, let us know about what happened to an earlier version of Mr. Hakeem Isler.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been in several really hairy situations where it was like, you know, multiple people, multiple opponents in a fight. But the one that I remember the most, I was playing basketball for a youth group, and it was a Christian youth group. And we would go around and we would play different teams in different communities. And in this one community, you know, it was a predominantly Latino community. And we were playing against them, and we were predominantly, well, we were mixed. We had Caucasian, we had African-American, we had Latino, all on the same team. And we ended up going out there to play against this community basketball team. And it seemed like everything was all good and it wasn't going to be a big deal. And when we got there, you know, we found out that we really weren't wanted there. It was real weird because, again, we were multicultural group. So it was weird because, you know, people were calling us all types of names. The N-word was being thrown around a lot before the game even started. And we brought like three people with us who came to watch the game with us, three of our friends. And they were up in the crowd, and it was just this really weird environment. We were supposed to be there just playing a game, having some fun, and it turned out to be like real over the top and edgy all the way through the game. There was a lot of moments that we almost got into a fight on the court, and it did not seem right. But we stuck it through, and we ended up winning that game. And so, but the tension was so high that my coach could feel it, you know, and he was Christian, very, you know, laid back Caucasian guy, you know, very soft-hearted. You know, he wasn't like a real like tough guy. He was just, you know, volunteering and helping out with the community. And he was really uncomfortable. So he was like, I need to go talk to the coaches real quick. He gave me the key. He was like, get everybody to the car. So I run to the room where the locker room, and I'm like, everybody just go out to the car. Like right now, we're going to get in the van. We got to go. And the three people that we came with that were up in the bleachers, they had came down. And as the team was going out to the car, so they were ahead of me by like, I'd say 30 feet or so. And they were leaving out of the building. We were walking down this hallway. And my friends who were in the stand, they had came down and they were in between us. So if you could just imagine, there's 30 feet ahead of us. The team is out. They're out the door. Then my friends are about in between. So they're like 15 feet away from me or so. And as we're walking out the door, there's this guy on the phone. And he looks like he's talking on the phone. And one of my friends that were in the bleachers, as my friend that was in the bleachers was going by him, he said something to him. And my friend said, well, if you feel that way, you know, let's take it outside. And it was like a movie scene, man, for real. I mean, it was crazy. This dude like turned to his left. He was on the phone. This is the old school phones, the pay phones, you know what I'm saying? Like nobody had a cell phone. The cell phones didn't exist. He looks to his left and it's so crazy. It's like a zombie movie. He like yells something and a sea of people start pouring out of that hallway, going out the door, following my friend. And now I'm stuck. It's like a T intersection. I'm stuck in the hallway. Mm-hmm. In front of me, there's the door, but there's all these people rushing through the door. They're yelling obscenities, N-word this, N-word that, da 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 da, and they're all flooding. And I'm like, I'm on an island right now. I'm by myself out here in the middle of nowhere. If these dudes recognize me as one of the dudes from that team, I'm done.
I'm toast.
So out of instinct, to this day is probably one of my greatest moments when it came down to like defending myself. But I just immediately, without hesitation, just start saying, yeah, let's get them in, da 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 da. And I'm like, you know, yelling and screaming, and I'm like them. I just become them. I just merge. I just straight up merge with them. And you know, obviously I don't feel that way. I was my team, but you know, it was the only way that I could get them to not look, the collective to not identify me as, you know, the cell, the rogue cell that, that needed to be destroyed, right? I needed to be a part of the anatomy, the part of the unit. And so, you know, I'm jumping up and down, I'm cursing, I'm waving my hands. And as I'm approaching the vehicle with the group, I realize my whole team is surrounded. They're in the parking lot at the van. They can't get in the van because I got the key, right? And it's like a U-shaped sea of people, you know, cutting off the van. So the van was parked up against a wall. So then, so if you imagine, it's not a circle because the wall is there. So it's a U-shape and it's got everybody locked in. And I'm just like, this is crazy. So I rush through the crowd and I jump in the van, open it up and tell some people to get in there. But my friend JP, who was the initial guy that had the issue with the guy at the telephone, him and that guy are still like having words and it looks like they're about to go to town. And so JP is out there and then several of my friends that were friends of JP are out there backing him up. Anyone who wasn't direct friends with JP just got in the van and they're like, we're out of here, right? And it's 12 of us total as a team. And I'd say about six of us are out there with JP and then everybody else is inside the van.
Okay, so how many people would you say were surrounding the van?
I'd say it was somewhere around 40 people.
Okay.
It was their whole team, which was like 12 people, and then they had a whole bunch of people in the bleachers. So it's, you know, and I mean that's a rough estimate. I don't know. But to me it was like the zombie apocalypse. You know what I'm saying? It's like a scene out of World War Z, you know, there's so many people out there. And all of a sudden it just starts happening. JP and the dude start scrapping. And then somebody hits JP. And then my friend Sanjay, who was there with JP, who was up in the stands, somebody hits Sanjay. Then Sanjay starts scrapping. And then my friend Cole, somebody hits Sanjay. My friend Cole jumps in. Then my friend Christian was trying to get his girlfriend, who is the third person, in the car and protect her. But then somebody hits him. And I'm out there. I'm like, yo, stop. And then as I'm trying to tell people to stop, I look to my left and this dude runs up behind my friend Cole and hits him in the back of the head. And I just lose it. And I just hit him really hard. I always make, you know, jokes about it because to this day, I think I sent that dude to another dimension. Because in my mind, I don't know what happened to him. Like, I can't place in my brain, like, once I hit him, like, what happened? Like, he and I did not scrap. You know, it was just like he just vanished. Then I end up fighting with other people. And I mean, it was crazy. It was like, again, a scene from a movie as far as I can remember. It was like people punching people and so on and so forth. And all I can remember is that thinking, like, there's no way that we're holding our own right now. If all these dudes just rush us, there's no way we can stop them. It's too many of them. I was able to break free for a moment to hear the coach's voice yelling, like, get in the van, get in the van. He's pushing his way through the people. Their coach is now outside. He's yelling, trying to get people to back down. And I just jump in the van. Everybody else jumps in the van. My coach jumps behind the wheel and he starts backing up, beeping the horn. People are hitting the side of the van. I mean, it's nuts, man. It was like, I mean, again, like it's like a zombie movie, you know, like all the zombies outside beating on the car and we're like trying to get out of there. And we get out of there and I was like, I remember thinking then, and I still think now, I have no clue how we survived that. None of us really had any major damage. You know, we had some scrapes and bruises cause we were getting hit, but it wasn't like none of us had to go to the hospital. Nobody had damage that was so bad that, you know, we had, days and days to recover. And that was it. And I learned some valuable lessons from that, that I still kind of take to this day that I call my mob rules, right? You know, like how do you deal with this mob mentality if you find yourself in that position. And again, I'm not like a great expert in the sense that I went see after that, I just got like the rush and I'm like, I'm gonna go seek out this so I can write, so I can do a podcast one day and tell the world about like all my lessons of how I, you know, crushed a bunch of skulls, you know, like, no, it was that scenario. And I've had smaller scenarios since, but nothing like that. That was the major one.
And that was a real life situation. That's something, it wasn't a movie. It wasn't something that, you know, you had words and in your mind, you played it out and say, you know, I should have done this. And then this is what I'm going to do. This is a real life situation where you found yourself in the midst of it. And based on the story, and we don't have anybody to corroborate, you know, JP's not here and Cole's not here. So we have to take Mr. Hakeem Isler's word for it. But based on the story, it sounds like you were in the midst of a situation where danger found you. You didn't go seeking danger. Mm-hmm. So you were in a situation where danger came and found you. And you were fortunate through, you know, whatever, you know, forces may be to get out of that situation. There's been a lot of, I mean, there's countless situations where things have transpired like that and people were not able to go away unscathed or even go away alive. So that's a blessing within itself. But what I'd like to hear from you now is some of the afterthoughts, some of the things that you learned from that. How do you think you got through it, or you and the team got through that based on the actions that you were taking? And just for people out there who maybe find themselves in a situation where danger finds them or danger seeks them out, how can they survive the situation and have the same outcome that you did?
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me first start by, so that no one gets the wrong impression of me, because you don't, you know me at a distance, you might be thinking, oh, this guy's full of himself. I'm not a superhero. Like, I'm not saying that I was, you know, so good at being a warrior that I was able to like win in this scenario. Like, there was no winning there. It was just, I'm saying literally, like, it was a matter of some really lucky choices in the moment. And then there was the matter of just not quitting and fighting with everything you got out of fear that it could all be over. And so I got hit, I got swollen, you know, like, again, no real major damage, but you know, it wasn't like I just like was a Bruce Lee movie. I'm hitting everybody and nobody's hitting me and I'm doing everything I need to do. So let me just be clear about that. So the lessons, I think lesson one, first and foremost, is exactly what you said. Trouble finds you sometimes. And we see that so much. If you just watch the news or watch YouTube, you know, they had this game not long ago, maybe 2 years or so, where they were just walking up to people, run up to people behind them and like knocking them out. You remember that?
Game, yep.
Yeah. And it was just like, you know, people didn't think that that could happen to them. I'm sure nobody walked out that day like, yeah, some random person's going to run up to me for no reason and just knock me out. Like, that's crazy. And I've heard so many times in self-defense classes that I taught as an instructor, where people are like, well, I don't live in a neighborhood like that. Okay. What does that mean? You know, trouble's everywhere.
Yeah.
Trouble's everywhere. The guy next door to you or the girl next door to you could be a serial killer, right? And they live in an affluent neighborhood, you know? So like, you know, you just never know. There is no excuse to not learn how to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And there is no excuse for being ignorant to the fact that bad things happen to good people. Because again, it's all around us, right? We have so much information at our fingertips that let us know that that's the deal, right? People with less information, whether it have been cave people or tribes, they know better, right? And they don't even have Google, yo. Yeah. They don't have YouTube. They can't watch it every day, right? They don't have Facebook popping up with ads or like news stories and stuff like that. But they know better.
Yeah.
They know like anytime, any moment a tribe, a rival tribe can pop up through them bushes and we better be able to defend ourselves. Point blank, period.
Yep.
Right? And so being ready and understanding that bad things happen to good people.
Knowledge bombs. We tend to drop them a lot around here, and we appreciate your feedback and support for the information, interviews, and perspectives shared. Become a Patreon supporter for Survive University and get additional exclusive content not shared during the podcast. Patreon subscribers also get information on other Survive University products and projects before they're released to the public. So visit patreon.com/Survive University and join us as we continue on this journey to get ready, be ready, and stay ready like never before.
So some of my lessons, there's four of them that I want to talk about in this. All right. So watch the dominoes, right? So pay attention to what's happening. A domino by itself isn't really exciting, right? So, but the domino effect of one thing leading to another thing, leading to another thing, you need to really pay attention. See what's happening around you. Know your environment. That's really important, right? And as that environment shifts and changes, you know, it's really important to understand what's going on there. And avoid those dangers. So I would have said, if I was the coach at that time, like if I walk in and immediately when me and my crew walk in, people from the crowd and people from the team are yelling the N word and this, that, and the other. Well, this first off is unprofessional, so we can't be here, right? Second off is dangerous for my team members. So I'm going to go and talk to the other coach and say, hey, if we can't figure this out, we can't play today. We're going to have to get out of here, right? But we just allowed for the whole basketball game, all of that anger and frustration and all that disrespect to just build. Mm-hmm. And then we won. So yes. We just set it off. We just was like, when the fuse was lit, when we walked in the door, we watched the fuse go down until the dynamite went off, right? Yeah. Instead of saying, oh, somebody just lit a fuse. Either we got to put this out or we got to get out of here before this bomb goes off, right?
Yep.
And we didn't do that. We just let it happen. So paying attention to what surroundings. How can we do that today? Listening to the news, watching what's going down, you know, so on and so forth. There was when we were having protests and then there were also riots in different places. I don't like to join those two words together. A protest is different from a riot. Sometimes a protest can devolve into a riot, but they're two different things and you can't always just say them together, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my personal feeling about it. But if you say, hey, I'm not sure what's happening, you know, if the protest is going to, I don't want to be a part of the protest and I don't want to be a part of a riot. I don't want to be a part of either one. If you're that person, I know at one point in time you could go on like a Snapchat and you could find what was, or an Instagram, and you can find what was going on in certain locations, right? And see like if there was a cluster of people, you know, doing this. And in our own town, you know, they were putting out information on Facebook like, hey, we're doing a protest at this time, mm-hmm. at such and such location. So you know what? If I'm not about that, I'm not going to be there. Mm-hmm. If I want to be a part of the protest, that's fine. I will be there. Mm-hmm. If I don't want to be a part of the protest, I'm going to avoid that area, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's something I feel uncomfortable with. That's your right. That's your prerogative as an American citizen. So don't go there, right? So, and then let's say if you are there, pay attention to the dominoes, right? One domino, two dominoes all standing up, looks really cool, whatever. But them dominoes start falling down. It looked like chaos is about to rain down. I need to be paying attention to that and saying, oh, time for me to go, yeah. Right? And so that's number one. Number two is go with the flow, right? So the dominoes are falling around you, right? This might be a good time that I turn into a domino for a moment, right? And, you know, and just move with that until I can get to a safe place. I'm not saying that I'm in a protest turns into a riot and all of a sudden I'm throwing rocks through windows, you know, but I'm saying like, you know, don't be so counter what's happening that it sets you up as a target. For instance, things starts devolving into a riot and now I'm the only person out there talking about stop, stop, don't do it. No, hey, hey, stop that, da, da, da. That's probably going to set me up for some failure, right? I love the idea of that person standing up for what's right and saying, this isn't right. Let's not, you know, hurt people and things of that nature. But you have to understand that's coming at the risk of your own life.
And there's a time and a place for that.
And maybe I can be on top of a building with a megaphone away from it all, like, hey, stop, you know, or something of that nature, but maybe not right in the heart of it, you know? And there should be, if things go south for you, there should be no surprise. You know, I can't swim around with alligators in a river and then because somebody told me it's safe, and then all of a sudden one of them snap at me and then I'm like, oh, I'm surprised now. No, I'm going to see an alligator. And again, I want to be very cognizant of my word choice because I'm not saying that if you're a protester, you're an alligator. I'm just using it as an example of saying that if I am in a situation that goes bad and I decide to try to be the peacekeeper and I see things are going wrong, then there should be no surprise that they don't want what they or whoever doesn't want to hear what I'm saying at that particular time. And if it turns on me, then I've kind of opened that up. I went into that area knowing that that wasn't a safe space for me to be in.
It's the expectation of human decency in chaos when people, they may be a decent person, but in the mob rule situation, the mob rules.
Yeah.
Quick question though, just backtracking. You said play the role. I know you mentioned early on that you were a team of people who had a different racial mix up. It was just a hodgepodge, mixed group. And you were going to an area that was predominantly one ethnic group. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that even though you were in a mob of individuals, and I'm only assuming based on your story that a lot of the people who were around you were of a different ethnicity, do you believe because you were mimicking the actions, you almost became invisible to them and you didn't stand out, your race didn't stand out because you were mocking, or not mocking, excuse me, you were mimicking their actions?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Okay. I actually taught that in a class once.
Okay.
I said because everyone in that crowd, me being a dark-skinned black guy, mm-hmm. like I didn't look anything like anybody in that crowd. Everyone in that crowd, you know, and you could have Latino people who are, you know, darker skin and, you know, but no one in the crowd was.
Yeah.
In my brain, I literally physically stuck out like a sore thumb. But because of my actions, I don't know, I just blended in really well. In all of that heat and stuff. And that is it. You could become invisible by just, there's many levels of invisibility, right? One is just becoming what people expect to see at that time, right? And seeing is not always like a visual seeing. Sometimes it's just like a mental or energy or whatever the case may be. And that's the thing that gets you to become invisible. And so that's what happened there. You know, going on to that next thing about, you know, or that thing that I was talking about and not about, you know, if things go bad, not being there. I always say also rule number three would be don't tread on people's statements. Right?
Wow. Okay.
Don't tread on people's statements and then feel like if things go bad for you, like, I don't know why that happened. If I'm in New York City and I'm on the sidewalk and I decide I'm going to paint a beautiful mural, mm-hmm. right? And you're like, well, I'm a New York person and I have every right to this block as this dude. And I just start walking on his mural, I might have a problem. Yes. And that's so, and it's okay to think, to say in your mind, like, hey, I have the right to be on this block. Okay, cool. But if you don't be surprised if you now have conflict with that person, right? And if that person has three friends like hanging out there and they all have a problem with you now because you didn't know, you set yourself up for that. there is going to probably be some city official or, you know, law enforcement person that shows up and says, hey, you can't do this. That's their job, right? But if you take it on yourself to just say, hey, I'm gonna walk over this person's mural, their statement, then you're now opening yourself up for that violence or that wrath or whatever happens next. So it's the same thing. I get and I believe that we all have the right to, you know, as long as we're not breaking the law, do our own thing. So if I say, you know what, there's a protest coming down my street and I should be able to walk down my street, you're absolutely right. You should be able to walk down your street. Mm-hmm. But
it's a big but.
Yeah. There's something happening out here.
Yeah.
And if you want to take that on, that's your choice. The outcome is also based on your choice, the choice you made. So if you decide I'm going to go get my gun and walk down the street and nobody better say anything to me, and people do say something to me and I pull out my gun and I shoot one and the rest swarm me, I set myself up for that one.
So you have the, let's talk about it in legal terms since we're in the United States of America, you have the right to take certain actions. Mm-hmm. That's your right as a citizen or a resident of the country. But what people fail to remember is that you also have the right to deal with whatever consequence of that. Yeah. And that's something that you may not necessarily be able to control or predict. But stepping away from the a political conversation, I mean, or even a race and gender or religious conversation, because what you're talking about fits into all of those paradigms. This happens during sporting events, mm-hmm. where you have two rival teams. And the only difference between the two groups is that their allegiance to an athletic group. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you see it a lot, like in international football or mm-hmm. football, what we call soccer here, where that allegiance is so rich and so deep that it causes riots. It causes a lot of, you know, chaos. And sometimes you can even hear it on a minute level, a basic level, when you're talking with some dudes and they talk about my team, you know, my team this, my, and it's like, you don't play for the team doesn't play you, pay you, or you purchased the jersey. So I guess you claim ownership of the team just because you own a percentage of the company based on your shirt. But that can turn into a physical altercation just purely based on the fact that you admire one group of individuals over another. And it doesn't matter race, like I said, religion, gender, it doesn't matter at all. It could just be the fact that you align yourselves with those individuals can cause you to be in a situation, or protesters, or even if we want to say rioters, put yourself in a situation where, hey, this is my mindset, that's your mindset, and it's that conflict. So we have to figure something out. Mm-hmm. And just thinking just because you have the right, or you want to prove your level of bravery or whatever to part the waters of, you know, the opposing force, that could potentially put you in a situation where you can get fisticuffs, you can get hurt up, and that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, just because you have the right doesn't always make it right for you in your life or at that time.
At that second.
Yep. And you still have to live with the consequences. It's the same way. Like if you're of legal age, you have the right to drink.
Yeah.
Right. But drinking can ruin your life. Yeah. Right. And so maybe it's not, or if I'm driving, maybe it's not the right time to drink. Right. Because that's against the law.
Yeah.
And so going back to this, like, yeah, you have the right to walk down the street, but maybe it's not the right time for you to walk down that street. You could do it. But then if there are negative consequences that come out of that, nobody's worried about your rights, or you won't be worried about your rights when you're in a hospital on a breathalyzer, mm-hmm. you know? You know, you won't be worried about your rights or you'll probably be way worried about your rights if you're sitting in some courtroom trying to defend your actions and you have to pay some lawyer $1 billion.
Yeah.
Right. Because that's also a right, is that you have to do process now. Yeah. Right. Maybe the best thing is to avoid that scenario. Right. Get less yes, I do have the right to walk on this block, but I'm not going to walk on this person's statement at this particular time because it's not going to be safe for me. And there are processes and systems in place that can probably take care of that. And I'm not going to worry about that. Is that saying never stand up for yourself? Of course, I'm not saying that. There's a time to stand up for yourself. But if you stand up for yourself, you also got to be wise as well. I mean, you know, if I'm standing up for my rights and my life, none of it matters if I don't have my life. And because I don't have my life, rights don't matter, right?
So that's a good way of saying it.
So it's like, you know, what are you trying to, what kind of statement, what kind of statement you're trying to make when you're outnumbered?
Yeah.
Right? Now, in this particular case, we couldn't go anywhere. So this leads me into my last point, which is if you have to fight, right, for mm-hmm. your right to be, exist, to survive, then you fight like a beast. And that's why I think that we weren't overrun is because we made such a committed stance that we showed these guys like we weren't going to go silently, right? If you're going to take us out, you're going to have to really fight. And whoever steps in this U-shape, arena is going to get smashed hard, and we're not going to, you know, and we're going to take some smashing, but we're going to keep giving smashing out. So if you're brave enough to step in here, then it's going to be, you're going to take a hurting. And that made some people question whether or not they wanted to step in there. And because of that, we didn't get overrun. And that was huge, a huge lesson for me about commitment, about going all in when you have to. But the last part of that lesson was not getting so lost in the adrenaline and the fighting and the chaos that when there was a moment to get out that we didn't see it. When I heard the coach's voice get in the car and I saw the other coach out there, then that's when I was able to break contact, and we all were able to break contact. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine out of the six of us that are out there fighting, all five of us break contact, and then one person is still stuck in the mode of fighting. And now all of a sudden you got one person out there, right? Left by themselves because they didn't take that opportunity to escape. And that'd be horrible, horrible. One person against 40. You know, then in that case, yes, there would have been an overrun. So don't lose yourself, right? You still have that primary objective, which is I have to get out of here, right? And so the mob rule there is, again, you know, fight as hard as you can if you have to fight, but always be looking for that moment to escape. Don't get lost. And, oh man, you know, I'm able to do this. No, I'm always trying to think about getting out of there because the whole dynamic is that I'm outnumbered. It's a mob, right? And I'm not trying to stay here and fight, you know, all day. And so that would be something that I'd be really, really focused on. But step number one, man, avoidance.
It brings it back home full circle. You spoke about it in such a way, and we talk about it in an anecdotal way, that it's like, yeah, this is, remember the time it happened. But want to make sure that people are aware what's really impressive or what makes this story entertaining is, one, the fact that you're able to tell it, you're here to tell it, but also the whole time, each step that you spoke of, your ultimate goal was escape. Your ultimate goal wasn't proving a point that you were the baddest. You weren't the baddest on the basketball court and you baddest in the arena. It was, okay, how do I escape the situation? When you were, the coach said, hey, get in the vehicle, and you grabbed a team and you guys were walking and you were stuck in a mass of individuals. How do I escape this situation? Okay, mimic their behavior. Mm-hmm. When you got out there, you started the van and you got everybody in the van, and you saw that you couldn't get your whole group, your tribe, or everyone who was with you together. Okay, how can we team together to get out of the situation? And even when you heard the voices of the coach, you know, in the chaos and everything, they're trying to disperse the crowd, It was like, okay, how do I get out of the situation? So at no point in there were you trying to say, okay, I'm trying to show that I got the biggest chest. Let me, you know, I can beat all 40 of you guys. It was like survive each step of the way, which I think gets lost a lot of the times when you see these YouTube clips or you see this little snippet of, you know, the video that shows one brief incident. They never show what happens before. They never show what happens after. It's always a exercise in dominance, which usually ends up to your avail. Now, when you were talking about the, if you were in a situation and all of you guys, there was one person left that didn't take heed and hear that, okay, there was an escape route. They just kept fighting. When that happens, in a way, they become the aggressor because they're not trying to get out. They're trying to show dominance. And usually that's when they get, you know, overwhelmed.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not escape anymore. It's like, okay, I'm going to make sure that I stomp out all these fires. Can't kill all the fires, you know, especially when you got 40 against one. So it's a dangerous situation. So I guess the story, I mean, you analyze it, but it is always, and we've talked about this before, it's always look for a means of escape. You're not trying to, even with you, me and you walking down the street, I having a white belt, you having a, and I'm exaggerating, you know, quadruple, you know, 80% black belt, you know, whatever. Even if we get into an altercation and you know that you can dominate me, your goal is escape. With a person who knows less, their goal is to make sure they don't look bad, which in turn means that they're setting themselves up for failure. So that is really, I love hearing the story, man, because it shows, it's entertaining one. I mean, it's hella hilarious, but at the same time, it's hilarious from the standpoint that you were able to look back on it and see how, okay, the things that you did, not even consciously, instinctually allowed you and your friends to get out of that situation with just a couple, you know, scrapes and bruises and whatnot. That's cool.
Yeah. So, but on the contrary, when I go on first dates, man, I'm always the black Bruce Leroy, right? I'm in there with my nunchucks and I like beat all 40 dudes down. No, I'm just playing, but.
You run in the phone booth and come out with your gi on.
Yeah. My gi on, I'm hitting people with the finger, the death touch, and that's always a big one. So I think with the mob rules, man, we hit some good topics today.
I think so, and I think you're, through the education of an actual example, many lessons learned. And like I said, it's a cool story, but it lends itself to a lot of lessons to think about. So if you get into that type of situation, hopefully some of the stuff will seep in and you'll understand what the objective is.
And that's a good note to end it on. So, all right, my preps, that's our episode for today. Thank you for listening and building your education in preparation with us. Please remember, real survival is not about what you can do as an individual, but when we empower those around us and we lift up everyone as a community. Due to this, we ask that you share this podcast with your friends, and we always appreciate any type of review that you leave us. In addition, if you're looking for training and you're looking for how to learn how to survive, you can join us at our website at surviveuniversity.com. You could also send us an email about any information or questions you might have at surviveuniversity@gmail.com. And as always, we want you to get ready, stay ready, and be ready. I'm Hakeem Isler.
I'm Main J, the OG.
And we will talk to you guys on the next episode.